Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and welcome to this edition of our English feature program. I'm Philippa Hitchin. Coming up today, the Pope and the Patriarch. Bartholomew I meets Benedict XVI before going on to visit his old alma mater, the Pontifical Oriental Institute. Catholic-Muslim dialogue back under the spotlight with a new forum aimed at healing divisions and promoting interfaith cooperation. And the Vatican Secretary of State visits the tiny Catholic community in the Central Asian Republic of Azerbaijan. Ecumenical Patriarch Bartholomew I, spiritual leader of the world's Orthodox communities, met with Pope Benedict here in the Vatican on Thursday. The two leaders last met in Naples last October during an international interfaith encounter sponsored by the St. Egidio community. And in 2006, Pope Benedict travelled to the Patriarch's headquarters in Istanbul, formerly the great Byzantine city of Constantinople. On Thursday afternoon, the Patriarch returned to Rome's Pontifical Oriental Institute, where he studied for a doctorate in canon law for 5 years during the 1960s. The Jesuit-run institute, built around an ancient courtyard in the shadow of the Basilica of St. Mary Major, is marking the 90th anniversary of its foundation by Pope Benedict XV in 1917. Among the professors on hand to welcome the Orthodox leader back to his alma mater was Jesuit Father Edward Ferrugia, Dean of the Faculty of Eastern Ecclesial Sciences. I caught up with Father Edward just before the Patriarch arrived in Rome to find out more about the mission and the history of this unique institution.
Well, of course, in 1917 there was war, a world war. And it took courage for a pope to found an institute to study other churches, exactly amid so much ruin. However, he did it, and it must be reckoned as one of his greatest things, that he founded both the congregation of the Eastern Church, at the time it was put in the singular, and also the Oriental Institute. They were founded in the same year, within a few months of each other. The first one was founded, the Congregation for the Eastern Church, was founded on the 1st of May, 1917, and the Institute, the Pontifical Institute of Oriental Studies, generally known as the Orientale here in Rome, was founded on the 15th of October, 1917. Therefore, revolution in Russia, the Pope's great efforts for peace, for which also he has received acknowledgement. There's a monument to him in Istanbul. But even in Santa Maria Maggiore, there is a Madonna which recalls his peace efforts, etc., a statue of Our Lady. Therefore, you know, these are the very dramatic times in which he's moving. However, he had been secretary to the Secretary of State, Mary Del Valle. And therefore, that brings us to the times of Pope Leo XIII. And he knew from within that there was much movement. What shall we do with millions of Christians, many of whom were Catholics, in the Ottoman Empire, whose end was foreseeable? And therefore, when there was the Eucharistic Congress in Jerusalem in 1893, the Eastern Patriarchs complained to the papal legate that they were always being treated like second-rate citizens in the church, and that great pope, who was Leo XIII, called for the following year a conference of these patriarchs, and as a result, the Magna Carta of the Easterners was written with the perspectives of the time, but nonetheless, it's a very great document, Orientalium Dignitas, the dignity of the Eastern churches. And now it took some time before the ideas which were evident at the time reached boiling point, if you like, with Benedict XV. But since Benedict XV knew everything from within, and he was, in my opinion, a great pope, although unfortunately underestimated, he was in a position to move. And although Even he himself was at the beginning at a loss what to do with this, with this new institution, because there were so many criticisms. It looked like a white elephant. For decades, he could put all the students of the institute in one big hall. He nonetheless persisted, and nowadays we can look back with gratitude to God Almighty that this little seed is now a big cedar of Lebanon. We have a big cedar of Lebanon in our garden. I think you must have seen it as we were going through it.
As you say, there's been enormous growth over these 90 years. It's now an extremely important centre, isn't it, for the history, the study of everything to do with the Eastern churches. Tell us a bit about its importance, its influence today.
Well, first of all, I want to make a distinction I hinted at the beginning. Here we have two faculties. Initially, there was only one, however. We have the Faculty of Eastern Ecclesial Sciences, and that's the faculty of which I'm dean, and it is the bigger faculty. And then there is the Faculty of Canon Law. But even the Faculty of Canon Law has grown enormously by leaps and bounds. When the patriarch, Bartholomew, was a student here, the student population of the Canon Law department never exceeded 15. I think it was less, just short of 15. Whereas now they are more than 100. And I see, too, as a dean, there is so much demand. I mean, if we had a couple of more professors, and Providence apparently is providing us with some now, we seem to be moving towards an Eastern university, which would be a real great thing for the East. For all they have done for the Catholic Church, they are a part of the Catholic Church, but also for all Easterners, this is the home of all Easterners. Benedict XV, in his greatness, says it right from the start in his foundational chart. This is open to Orthodox and Catholics and anybody who has the requisites. And so it has been, and we have had some very remarkable Eastern Orthodox here among us, and we are very, very proud of them. And they consider this to be their home. They come here frequently to study. We have a great library, a gem. We owe that to Pius XI. He had been a librarian of the Ambrosiana in Milan. And so he knew what a library is and what a difference it makes. And this is certainly, to say the least, one of the very best Eastern libraries taken as a whole that you can find in the world. Here, the Canon Law faculty produced, through the good services of the Secretary of the Commission for the Revision of the Canon Law, Eastern Canon Law, Father Ivan Žužek, who died about 3 years ago, 4 years ago, I believe, they managed to give the Church, help the Church, to give the world its first a corpus of canon law in one volume, if you like it, everything put together, so that now we have two codexes. We have the Latin and the Eastern, and this the Eastern for the first time. And that is a great achievement, mainly due to this faculty of canon law. And we see now that there are people here coming to us for historical subjects, for example, people who haven't studied theology, but are willing to bear up, you will excuse me that I use that expression, with so much theology, because they have discovered something vital about the East, Christian East, and they feel it has to be published, and it has to be published here, to be studied here. So as I say, I feel there is so much demand, we are moving towards becoming the first Eastern Catholic university, the first pontifical university for the East, open to all on an equal basis, whether Orthodox or Catholics or Westerners. We have also among our students Lutherans, Presbyterians, occasionally even non-Christians, you know, Muslims who might be interested, etc. Therefore, I see this immense growth. We started with being about 40, I believe, if we were at the beginning, we were something like that. Now we are every year roughly 350 students. And we would be without a doubt more if we had better premises and more professors. The professors, even Jesuit professors, seem up and coming. The premises, you know, one of the greatest blessings we had this year, the Pope, Benedict XVI, graciously received us, and he spoke according to our hearts. He said, I couldn't believe it, that he used the words, I engage myself to help you, to give you better premises, that is great, at least, you know, we are very happy to be here, but we have too many students, and we don't know how to respond to this cause. Therefore, that's why we organized a symposium from Benedict to Benedict, from Pope Benedict XV, the great Pope who founded us, to Pope Benedict XVI, who with an equally great vision is giving this magnificent support to the Christian East on an equal basis. Here the popes have been ecumenical all along.
Pope Benedict XVI, of course, has placed a great priority on ecumenism within his pontificate. And you must play an important role here too, I would imagine, in furthering understanding and perhaps in some small way reconciliation between the East and Western churches.
Naturally, with the changes brought about by Vatican II, the Jesuits here also became greatly involved in ecumenism. I can mention Father John Long, who dedicated most of his life to ecumenism. I can mention Father Kolvenbach, who was the former general of the Jesuits and who was rector of the Oriental Institute for 2 years. There are quite a number of people who are involved very intensely in ecumenism. But again, I would say the best thing we can do for ecumenism is to study, as the Church wishes us to do. To destroy preconceptions, there's nothing like a good knowledge of history, and that you put things together without any unnecessary emotions, let's say, you know, very balanced, and usually that helps more than anything else.
Finally, we're marking this anniversary with a visit from one of your most illustrious students. Patriarch Bartholomew is coming from Turkey, from Istanbul, to give a lecture here, isn't he? Tell us about the significance of this for you, for your students.
Well, of course, we are immensely proud to have had the present ecumenical patriarch as our student. And he's certainly one of our most famous, if not our most famous, alumnus. And I think for us, it's a shot in the arm, too, that such an important figure, who is the first primate of the Orthodox East, especially of the community of Constantinople, he has, let's say, moral authority as a figure who represents something, who represents a big history, a big church, etc. So for us, it's a huge honor. Then I think it's also significant because it happens at this time, at this particular moment, when dialogue between the Roman Catholic Church and the Orthodox churches who recognize themselves in this Constantinopolitan community is moving ahead. So we think that is very providential. And I must say how moved he was when I had to carry the invitation, and how moved he was, and I'm very much looking forward to meeting him again here, and for us it cannot but be a blessing.
And my thanks there to Jesuit Father Edward Farrugia, Dean of the Faculty of Eastern Ecclesial Sciences at the Pontifical Oriental Institute. And from ecumenical relations to interfaith dialogue. A team of top Muslim scholars concluded a 2-day meeting with members of the Pontifical Council for Interreligious Dialogue on Wednesday. The talks ended with a joint communique announcing the formation of a Catholic-Muslim forum, which will convene in November and include a meeting with Pope Benedict XVI. The forum and this week's meeting grow out of a letter entitled A Common Word, signed by 138 Muslim scholars and sent to Christian leaders 1 month after Pope Benedict's Regensburg lecture, which angered many Muslims around the world. That common word initiative has now grown to include around 240 Muslim scholars from different traditions who are determined to make the voice of mainstream moderate Islam heard above that of an extremist minority.
We need signs of hope. So when you ask what are we trying to achieve by meeting the Pope, and not just the Pope, but other religious symbols like Alexei of Russia or the Archbishop of Canterbury or the evangelical leaders of the United States, we want the sight of these leaders, with our ulama, together, standing together in love of God, love of neighbour, so that we have signs of hope.
Dr. Arif Ali Nayed heads the Royal Islamic Strategic Studies Centre in Amman, Jordan, and was one of the Muslim delegation presenting the results of this week's meeting to journalists on Wednesday.
Basically, it was a preparatory meeting of a purely technical procedural nature, but it concluded with some very, very important consequences, which make us very, very happy. First of all, the atmosphere was quite positive and welcoming, and it was very nice to be with our counterparts from the Catholic Church. Furthermore, by the end of the meetings, we emerged with a permanent structure that will ensure that the Catholic-Muslim engagement and dialogue continues into the future, to work out issues and to work out an exchange of opinions about important matters. So we together established something which is called the Catholic-Muslim Forum, which will be meeting every 2 years, 1 year in Rome, and the subsequent meeting will be in a Muslim country, either Amman, Jordan, or Abu Dhabi in the United Arab Emirates, or Indonesia, Kuala Lumpur, and there will be alternation. This structure ensures that this is not just a momentary, exciting event, but a process that begins with love of God and love of neighbor, and continues to build upon this main theme that we gather around to address real issues that concern humanity today. So we are very pleased about the establishment of this Catholic Muslim Forum. We are also very pleased that we have been able to jointly decide the theme, which will be love of God and love of neighbor, and we take that as a clear endorsement of the Common Word initiative, and we thank the Vatican for that. And furthermore, we have decided on the first sub-theme, which will be on the theological spiritual foundations for this initiative, which is very important, so that we are not just engaged in socio-political discourse, but in deep discourse. And the second day theme will be regarding the dignity of human beings, human dignity, and also mutual respect, and educating the youth about mutual respect between us. We will conclude with an open session on the third day, and we expect the third day to also include a meeting between His Holiness the Pope and our eminent excellencies, the ulama of Islam, so that there can be a clear symbol of hope and of agreement, so that we can go forward in a positive manner.
Four religious leaders and scholars from each side will participate in the November meeting, which aims to send a strong message of hope and support to all those working for peace between the two faith communities in countries around the world. When asked about the Muslim reactions to the Regensburg lecture, Dr. Nayed stressed it is vital to focus on healing divisions and misunderstandings, and he issued an appeal for all victims of violence, including the Chaldean Catholic Archbishop of Mosul, who was kidnapped in Iraq last Friday.
This whole initiative is about healing. It is about healing the wounds of a very pained and in many ways destroyed world. We have cruelty all over the place. We have wars, we have massacres, we have terrorist acts, we have torture, we have people who are kidnapped. And I take this opportunity to express our heartfelt prayers for the release of the Archbishop of the Chaldean, who was kidnapped recently in Iraq, and for all prisoners of war and prisoners of politics and prisoners of cruelty. There are tens of thousands of prisoners in Iraq and in Palestine and many other places, and we pray for the release of all prisoners. We also take this opportunity to remind our fellow Muslims that it is against the Prophet's teaching to even touch religious figures and monks and priests, because these people don't only represent themselves as human beings who are dignified and worthy of the highest respect and sanctity, but also the fact that these people represent millions and sometimes billions of other human beings. Religious persons and religious leaders and religious symbols must be respected. And we are very happy that Al-Azhar and Vatican released in very recent days a very important statement condemning the insulting of religious symbols. And we pray for the release of the Archbishop and of all political prisoners, and pray for God to give this world peace. And we hope that this initiative is part of the healing.
Dr. Aref Ali Nayed, head of the Royal Islamic Strategic Studies Center in Amman, Jordan, was one of the five Muslim scholars meeting with members of the Pontifical Council for Interreligious Dialogue this week. Vatican Secretary of State Cardinal Tarcisio Bertone travels to the Central Asian Republic of Azerbaijan on Thursday for a visit that will include the inauguration of the first Catholic Church since the country gained independence from the Soviet Union in the 1990s. The Cardinal has also been visiting the neighbouring Republic of Armenia, despite a state of emergency imposed after an opposition protest turned violent at the weekend, with at least 8 people killed. The situation also remains tense on the border between Armenia and Azerbaijan after a shootout earlier in the week between soldiers in the disputed border region of Nagorno-Karabakh. During the visit, however, the Cardinal is due to meet with the Azeri president and top government officials, as well as being welcomed by leaders of the Muslim and Orthodox communities.
The Muslim community in Azerbaijan is 80% of the population, which means it is an overwhelming majority.
Archbishop Claudio Gujarotti is the Holy See's representative to Azerbaijan, as well as to neighbouring Georgia and Armenia. He told me more about the itinerary and the aims of the Cardinal's visit.
Well, certainly the first aim is meeting, supporting the Catholic community there, which is partially made up with people who are descendants from Catholic families, and partly of workers that are in Azerbaijan, particularly from the Philippines or from India, for their own jobs. And he is going to inaugurate officially the first Catholic Church after communism. And it's very important that at the inauguration we shall have the presence of the President of the Republic and all the highest religious authorities, which means the head of the Muslim community, the Russian Orthodox bishop, and also the head of the Jewish community, together with the diplomatic corps and the different civil authorities. Then he will have a very prolonged meeting, and he is a personal guest of the Sheikh al-Islam, that is the highest Muslim authority of the Caucasus. And we wanted to honor the guests in a very special and solemn way, which means that, of course, a message of tolerance and mutual comprehension will be spread also via the media that will be massively invited to the meetings. And then the His Eminence will have meetings with all the civil authorities just to foster this possibility of living together and having an atmosphere of mutual friendship, particularly with the Muslim communities all over the world.
This visit, of course, marks Pope John Paul's trip to Azerbaijan in 2002,
right,
during which he also brought a message of peace and reconciliation.
Yes.
What would you say, perhaps, were the lasting results, the lasting legacy of that visit?
Well, you know, people are still very much impressed by the visit of John Paul II. I remember, because I was already here, I was already in Azerbaijan during that period, people were astonished and very deeply touched by the fact that the Pope, in those terrible health conditions, accepted to go and visit such a small Catholic community, but above all, meet also the Muslim inhabitants of Azerbaijan, and they told me, we are all here in the street to see him because he is a holy man and because really he decided that he could stand the suffering and the fatigue of this travel in order to show a sign of solidarity and also of fraternity with our people. So the legacy of the visit of the Cardinal is exactly on the same path. It means that Pope Benedict XVI continues exactly the same attitude, sends his first collaborator in order to witness his presence and his message.
Can you tell us something about the Muslim community there and what kind of influence the Muslim community there has on the region?
Well, you know, the Muslim community in Azerbaijan is 80% of the population. What is specific in that country, in spite of the Soviet legacy, is the fact that they try their best in order to establish an atmosphere of tolerance, of religious tolerance, which is also expressed by the fact that all the traditional religious leaders are always together. And they will be together also during the inauguration of the church. You know, the sign that the president of a country with such a high majority of Muslims take part in the inauguration is something which is very significant. The message is the following, that Azerbaijan wants to show concretely that being Muslims and being tolerant is possible. And they want to do it very openly. We must remember that the land on which the church is built was given as a present by the father of the president, to Pope John Paul II, and that also the presence of the new president at the celebration is a sign that they want to express a welcome to other religions in Azerbaijan. Of course, asking respect and not a kind of wide and violent proselytism, which could affect not only the atmosphere in the country, but also the political equilibrium, the political balance. So with this visit, Azerbaijan is ready to show that they want to be tolerant and they want to bring it to the attention of the whole world. Of course, they will also raise the problem of the Nagorno-Karabakh crisis that originated a war between Armenia and Azerbaijan, a war which is not settled yet, with the tragedy of many people that were obliged to leave their own homes and have been living for a long time as refugees. So that is another sign of suffering that certainly will be shown to His Eminence, and where he will also pronounce a sign of solidarity of the Holy Father and of the Holy See.
And my thanks there to Archbishop Claudio Gujarotti, Apostolic Nuncio to the Republics of Azerbaijan, Armenia and Georgia. And that's all from me, Philippa Hitchin, and from all of us here at the English Programme for today. Join us again at this same time tomorrow or find us on the internet, www.vaticanradio.org. For now, stay tuned to Vatican Radio. Laudato Jesus Christus.